Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 84 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tiber, your host, and today I have a very, very special guest, John Corcoran. I have been a John Corcoran fan for a long time. I can't tell you how many webinars and podcasts of his I have listened to. It literally is dozens upon dozens. And I'm delighted to have him on as a guest today. John is from the Washington, D.C. area originally, and after undergrad school, he actually went to work in the law in the White House as a speechwriter in the Clinton administration. After that, he went to law school and became a solo practitioner. But he's probably best known for his involvement in the entrepreneurial space and the online marketing and business development endeavors with his company's Smart Business Revolution, which was a blog and a podcast and a website that you can visit. Now, he also, with a partner of his, has developed something called Rise 25, which is a entrepreneurial retreat for people who want to work on their businesses. So, listen, I could talk to this guy for hours and hours, and I'm delighted that he had a few minutes to spend with us today. And so without any further hesitation, here's my new friend, John Corcoran. John Corcoran, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, it's an honor. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. I've been a follower and a groupie of John, of everything John Corcoran for years. So I'm delighted to finally have a chance to have you on our podcast. John, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and kind of how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I am a lawyer. Or I kind of jokingly refer to myself as a recovering lawyer, depending on who I'm talking to. Most people get that. So I told someone that this weekend, and they're like, I don't understand. So the joke was, you know, lawyers are kind of like recovering alcoholics sometimes. But anyway, so, I had a career before even going into law. I worked in politics. I was had amazing good fortune to be a writer in presidential letters and messages in the Clinton White House. I was a speechwriter for Governor of California. I also worked in Hollywood for a time. I was an early employee of DreamWorks. After I got my law practice, practiced with the firm for a number of years and then struck out on my own, started my own boutique law firm here in the San Francisco Bay Area and Silicon Valley, and catered primarily to small business owners and entrepreneurs. And then eventually realized that that is challenging. You know, I had a couple of years of just kind of flat, stagnant growth. And always wanted to have a bigger impact. And so started to, you know, dive into other things like blogging and podcasting, and eventually took a long time, but eventually built an audience around that and was able to monetize it through a variety of different ways. And so now I've got my blog and podcast called Smart Business Revolution. And then I also co-founded a business called Rise 25 with Dr. Jeremy Weiss, who's a chiropractor, and we do retreats for entrepreneurs. And so we can dive into either of those.
Well, I'd like to, you know, cover both, but let's talk about your solo career for a moment. You worked in a law firm, you know, originally coming out of law school, but did you always envision yourself as an entrepreneur? Did you have a solo mentality from the beginning?
I did. Yeah, I absolutely wanted to start my own firm, and I kind of gave it a shot right after law school. I couldn't really make a go of it, though. I didn't really know what I was doing. I really needed a couple years of working in a firm in order to just kind of figure out some of the basics.
Wait a second. They didn't teach you that in law school?
Yeah. Shocking, isn't it? Yeah. Right?
Really?
I wish that they did. I wish that they had a whole program in that and you could graduate from law school and you can shepherdize the hell out of cases, right? But you can't, you know, you don't know how to get clients. You don't know how to sign on clients. You don't know how to take a retainer check. You don't know how to get more clients. You don't know how to meet expectations, all those things that you need to do when you've got to practice. And so, yeah, I worked for a couple of firms for a couple of years. I predominantly worked for smaller firms. I enjoyed that more because you got greater responsibility. I mean, I basically had so much independence. It was almost like I was running my own firm. And literally when I started my own firm, I moved up one flight in my building. There was an open space upstairs. So my commute didn't even change. And a lot of my clients came over with me. So it didn't really change that dramatically, except I had a lot more freedom in running my own practice.
We had an attorney on last week, Dave Diggs, who literally stayed in the same office space and changed the nameplate on the door.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah, what was your biggest challenge as a solo?
You know, there's a lot of challenges. You know, what ultimately came to the challenge is that I wasn't really made. You know, there are always some areas that you're stronger in and other areas that you're weaker in. And I kind of reached a point where it was either partner with another attorney or scale up what ultimately was a lower margin business. And neither of those seemed like a great result for me because I wasn't great at all the things you have to do when you're managing a practice. And also my revenue was really stagnant year after year. I was kind of making the same amount like 3 years in a row. And I wanted to be able to diversify my revenue sources so I wasn't just dependent on hourly billing. I wanted to be able to take a vacation and maybe make a little money while I'm on vacation and not have to worry about clients abandoning me while I was away. And so that's when I started exploring other ways to diversify my revenue because ultimately most lawyers are not diversified and they're really, really at risk of, you know, if they get hit by a bus or even, you know, I had a legal client who threw out his back. He was doing $6 million a year and had a dozen employees working for him. He threw out his back. He was on his back in a bed for 2 months and he had to lay off everyone that worked for him because the business was totally dependent on him. And that's even worse if you're a solo or a small firm because, you know, the business really is heavily dependent on you. So those are the types of things that started getting me to explore, okay, how can I make this business bigger than just me?
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're one of those solos that have just started a family, maybe you've just got married and you've got those pressures and responsibilities on you, it can be a terrifying, you know, place to be.
Absolutely.
Without knowing how you can develop a business that can sustain you not being there for some period of time.
Right. And every, you know, it's kind of another challenging thing. It was every month you're starting over from zero. You know, I mean, I wasn't doing contingency or anything like that. You know, it was every month. It was like, you know, yeah, you have some clients, you know, that carry on from month to month. But, you know, ultimately every month it's like, I got to go hustle and get more clients in the door. And then it's this classic problem of, so you hustle, 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 you network, you market, whatever, you get some clients in the door, then you get busy working on those clients, that client work. So then you neglect networking, you neglect marketing. So then things die down and then you don't have that pipeline in place. And so you have to go and hustle, hustle, hustle to get more clients in the door. And it's kind of this never ending roller coaster. And so I just always knew that I needed to do something in order to get away from that. And that's what led me to kind of explore blogging and writing. I've always been a writer. It's always been something I've been passionate about. So it was naturally the thing that I was drawn to in order to, build a platform for myself.
So that's a perfect segue to now how you became more entrepreneurial focused. And I had always thought that it probably was your writing background. Cause as you said, you were a writer in the White House. And so is that what first attracted you, the idea of putting out a blog? And if so, were you blogging for other attorneys or blogging for potential clients or blogging for yourself? I think that's one of the questions that attorneys always have to address.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I did a bit of all of those things. I think ultimately you should be blogging for yourself because you don't want to go and build a bunch of content for a firm that you're working for. And then when you leave, all that content, all those leads that you've built continue to flow to that firm. So if possible, my recommendation is you have your own separate blog, which is really building up your own personal brand, which is something that you can bring with you. Look, you don't leave all your network of connections and relationships behind when you leave a job and you go up to a new one, you go to a new one. And I don't think that you should do the same thing with a blog, leaving behind all of your content that you've written for the firm that you're working for before. So if at all possible, I highly recommend creating your own thing. And so I blogged initially about legal topics, hoping to get, you know, because I was a lawyer, hoping to get new legal clients in the door. I wrote about all kinds of different topics. I found that all that traffic was really transitory because it was about a narrow legal topic. People would find what they wanted and then they would bump, you know, they'd jump and go somewhere else. So eventually I kind of honed in. I realized, okay, I really like working with entrepreneurs. So I started writing more about entrepreneurship. I also found that that was too broad. And so I narrowed in even further, and I, based on feedback from other people said, you know, John, you're really good at building relationships. You're really good at networking. How about you write more about that? So then when I started writing about that, that's when things really kind of took off for me. And then the ironic thing is, yeah, it did start with writing. That was definitely a big part of it. But then it wasn't until I really discovered webinars that webinars really helped that business to grow a lot more dramatically. And with webinars, you create a presentation, but you don't write as much as you do when you're guest blogging and doing things like that. So I really kind of abandoned that form of writing. And most of the writing that I do now is writing for my own email list or writing for my own blog rather than writing for other, like I'd written for Forbes, I'd written for Entrepreneur, I'd written for Huffington Post, but none of those things were as effective as webinars were. And you know, the fact is you got to pursue what's working for you. So that's what I did. I just kept on going with what was working for me.
Well, I think, you know, the challenge there, and I face the same thing, you know, in my career here, is trying to find where the intersection of that entrepreneurial focus is with your legal career, if that's what you want to continue to do. And I think that in your case, that the idea of talking about relationship building and networking is a perfect nexus of those two worlds. One of the things I did in preparation for this evening's interview is I went back to my John Corcoran folder of things I've collected over the years. And the very first thing that I was exposed to was something that you did a long time ago called 5 Ways to Give Value and Grow Revenue. Hmm. Do you remember that? It was a webinar.
Yeah.
It was a webinar you did about how we as individuals can provide value to other people in terms of being able to foster a relationship and thereby grow revenue. And I've kept it to this day, and I have to say that I follow the premises. I try and do that. So tell us a little bit more about how then Smart Business Revolution developed on that premise.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think that probably that was one of many webinars. I would slightly change the topic or change the subject line in order to see what kind of engagement it gets.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, so that was probably one of those ones that I did. But, you know, throughout my career, and I've had some amazing opportunities, not because I'm the sharpest tool in the shed, you know, certainly not the case. I mean, I went to what's mostly known as a party school. I was an English major. When I worked at the White House, I didn't have an advanced degree, graduate degree, or anything like that. But I've been good at building relationships, and I credit that personally to when I was a kid, my father got laid off a couple times, and each time we had to move 3,000 miles away into a new community, and so I had to immerse myself and make new friends. And because of that, I'm a little bit more comfortable that, you know, joining new communities and building new relationships. And so that's how I ended up coming around to teaching other people how to do that. And oftentimes I think we're drawn to things that we're challenged by rather than being drawn to things that we're naturally good at. And it took other people telling me, hey, John, you're pretty good at this. You should be telling other people how to do that. And that's how I came around to teaching people how to do that through my site, through Smart Business Revolution. And I just had to embrace it. A lot of times people struggle. They think, you know, I was talking to a guy last week about this who's like, they didn't want to be known for some one thing. And oftentimes people start in one area and then they broaden from there. You know, you don't start as a thought leader, like, you know, a Tony Robbins or something like that. You know, if Tony Robbins gets sit down, people can interview him. They can ask him any question under the sun. He's established his bona fides. He's got authority, and he can answer with authority on a variety of different areas, even if he's not a subject matter expertise in those areas. But now, today, if you want to become known as a thought leader, if you want to become an expert and recognized for your expertise, you really need to pick one area and go deep on that. And then you can broaden, and people assume you have expert status in other areas after you've established your bona fides in one particular area. So, you know, for me, I just chose networking. I don't really use that word because everyone hates networking.
Yeah.
You know? No one actually wants networking. What they want is the end result. They want clients, or they want more freedom, or they want more revenues in the door. If networking gets it for them, that's great, but they don't actually want networking. So I don't use that word to describe it. I talk more about relationship building. You know, so that's how I ended up, you know, focusing on that. And then since that point, it's broadened, especially through some of the stuff I'm doing through Rise 25. It's broadened into other areas as well.
Yeah, well, the relationship building is key to, as you say, developing new business. And I think in particular for attorneys who have been hesitant to adopt other forms of marketing and entrepreneurial activities, that relationship building is the one thing they can get their hands and arms around. But they don't really know, or the question that I get asked was, well, where do I start? Do I just go to bar association, you know, events? And if so, I mean, I don't want to be that guy running around handing out my business card to everybody and anybody. So what would you say to somebody who says, I want to work on developing that skill set, but I'm not sure where to begin?
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of people do that. And another big objection people have is, I don't know what I can have to offer other people. It's especially prevalent when we're earlier in our career and we're building up a reputation and we're thinking, oh man, you know, I'm just getting started. I just graduated from law school. Or maybe even, you know, this actually, people who've been in practice for 5, 10, 15 years still feel the same way. They see some other attorney who's more advanced, more successful, or whatever, and they feel like, what can I possibly have to offer that person? And I think a lot of times people get stuck on the idea of, it needs to be something related to my vocation. So if they're a tax attorney, then they need to, like, suddenly provide some amazing wisdom around tax law for this other attorney. And a lot of times it doesn't need to be that. When you build relationships, it can be something personal. It can be, you know, a personal piece of advice, or it could be, you know, I know you like this kind of food. Here's this new restaurant that's opening up, and just telling someone about that. And you start to build a relationship that way, and people start to grow to trust you even more. But in terms of, like, macro, what to do as a lawyer and building relationships, you know, you want to take an 80-20 approach, the Pareto principle. You want to focus on the 20% that's going to get the most results. And a lot of times people just, they take kind of a spray and pray approach, and they just look at everyone, and they're, you know, following up with everyone in their network, and that just gets overwhelming. One easy thing you can do, this is something that I did, you know, aggressively when I was full-time practicing law, is just keep track of every referral that comes your way, whether it turns into paying business or not. Look back, you'll be able to see patterns emerge. You can look back and see, okay, this person referred something to me in June, in September, and in December. And that's what you want to double down on. Those are the people that are most important. That's kind of the little hinges, swings, big doors approach. Those are the ones you really want to focus on. And I remember when I was practicing, at one point I was looking back at all the people that referred business to me in the last year, and I realized there was this one realtor who referred 3 clients to me in about a 3-month period, and then hadn't referred anything to me in about 9 months. And I looked through my email and my notes and everything, and I realized I hadn't even communicated with her in about 9 months. So what did I do? You know, I reached back out. I sent an email and said, hey, you know, it's been a while. How you been? Not in the manipulative way, but just like, hey, how you been? I haven't talked to you in a while. Would you like to get coffee? Would you like to get lunch? We should catch up. And this is someone that, you know, I genuinely liked. We went and had lunch. And what do you know, about 2 months later, 2 weeks later, she ends up referring some business my way. You know, but it takes that discipline to go back, keep track of the referrals that are coming in, and go back and look at them and see what patterns are emerging, and realizing who are the people that you really want to focus and drill down on and prioritize. And now that might sound a little bit icky to some people, like, oh, prioritizing one person or another. Well, first of all, I'm not talking about personal relationships. Yeah, I'm not talking about friendships, okay? This has nothing to do with friendships. I'm talking about your business. I'm talking about what are the most important relationships for your business. And with that, absolutely, yes, you should be discriminating. You shouldn't be just going out there willy-nilly and connecting with every single person under the universe. You should be doubling down on the relationships that are most fruitful for your business and deepening those relationships further. And if you do that, I guarantee you will start to see good results from it.
How did you systematize that approach? I mean, is it software? Do you use a software tool?
Yeah, I know you and I are both fans of Contactually. I use Contactually. Contactually is a CRM, which stands for Customer Relationship Management or Client Relationship Management. Here's the thing. We all communicate across different platforms now. People are using phone, text message, email, sending Facebook messages, LinkedIn messages. There are all these different platforms. You need to have a software tool that is designed to balance all those different relationships and keep track of all those different relationships. How many people do you know who, if you ask them, where do they keep their database? They'll just say like in my phone, right? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And that's not the best way to do it.
Now then my follow-up question is then do you back that up? Because if you lose your phone, do you lose?
You know? Exactly. Right. Right. Then you get those annoying emails. They're like, I lost my phone.
Yeah.
Send me all your contact info.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, having a tool like that and then something like a Contactually, we can just scratch the surface on it, but it's got tools built into it to automate some of that follow-up. So, for example, like the woman that I mentioned, the real estate agent, Contactually didn't even exist back when I was talking about this experience. But if I was using Contactually now with her, I would put her into a bucket along with other people who want to make sure that I'm going to follow up with her at least once a month. And when I say follow up, I don't mean I'm going to pester her and say, hey, do you have any business for me? I mean, I'm going to follow up with her and I'm going to try and deliver value to her. And if 30 days have gone by, then I'm going to make sure that I continue to reach out so that that relationship doesn't go cold. And so often I ask people, you know, like about their past relationships with past clients and stuff. And I guarantee you people have got clients that were like raving fans of theirs who really were, you know, appreciative of the work that they do. And that lawyer or that business owner or whatever has not followed up with that person in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. And that is just, you know, going to drive your business into the ground if you follow that practice. You know, conversely, if you use a software tool to make sure that you're keeping those relationships fresh and that you're following up with them on a regular interval, then it's going to really benefit your business.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work you have to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that strengthens your practice and can save you hours each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and more cases without adding stress or chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. No more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. And Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone on your team is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Getting a new website design can be a real pain point for attorneys. You're busy practicing law and running your firm, and the last thing you can afford is to waste time dealing with an incompetent design team that doesn't understand what you're trying to accomplish. So if you've been putting off that new website for your law firm, I get it. But what if I told you that getting a new website created for your law firm doesn't have to suck? My friends at Spotlight Branding pride themselves on their responsiveness, on great communication, and on delivering results for their clients. And unlike many law firm marketing companies out there, Spotlight Branding doesn't lock their clients into long-term contracts. In fact, they offer a no-risk, money-back guarantee on their work, so you can have total peace of mind while you work with them. I trust the team at Spotlight Branding, as you know, to build and manage my website, as well as manage my social media strategy, my monthly email newsletter, and a whole lot more. I recommend them to solo and small firm attorneys every chance that I get. They're currently offering a special gift for our listeners, so visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE to learn more. Brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. You know, I mentioned that webinar that I listened to of yours way back when, the 5 ways to give value and grow your revenue. One of the first things that you said in that was, I had written this down in my notes, that if you want to get introductions, you need to make introductions.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think that's a really powerful kind of viewpoint. You can't sit back and wait and hope that this kind of relationship marketing happens to you. You have to go out and help people form relationships, even if it's, you know, has nothing to do with you. It's just you're the person introducing to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is so powerful. And it's one that I've just really prioritized because, yeah, if you want to get other people to introduce you to other smart people that are a good fit for your business, then there's really no better way than you starting first. You know, it's kind of like, you ever get a LinkedIn request from someone asking you to endorse them and you haven't heard from this person in like 2 or 3 years?
Or I don't even know who they are.
Oh yeah, you don't know who they are? Or yeah, you're like, okay, then, yeah, I haven't, you know, what have you done for me lately? You're asking me to take time out of my day to go write a review of you. I just kind of feel like, well, it's much easier practice to go out there and write reviews of other people. And then if you do that, a certain number of those people will then reciprocate for you. And you're paying it forward rather than asking other people to give, you know, do something for you first. And that's just generally the approach that I take. And, you know, I mean, I can't even list all the great relationships and friendships and partnerships that have come because someone else out there said, hey, John, you should really meet this other person. And the reason that I get people to introduce me to other people is because I do the same thing, because I start first. You know, you model that behavior and then other people will do the same thing. So I'm just a huge advocate of making introductions. And by the way, Contactually is a great tool for making that easier because they have software where you can send an introduction in seconds. Basically, you know, once you've introduced someone once, you can write up a short little paragraph of introduction and it'll format the email for you and send it out. So, you know, once I've introduced someone to someone else, then the next time I go to introduce them, I go into Contactually, I look up the person's name, I pop up their profile, I hit introduce, I grab the next person's, type in their name, and then it pre-formats the entire email. I can customize it however I like. I hit send or I schedule it for later and boom, it's sent. And those time savers means that ultimately at the end of the year, you will have made a lot more introductions than you would have otherwise if you need to go into your Gmail and type it up and wait a second, what's that person's website? And oh man, where do they live? I need to put that in my bio. And pretty soon you're giving up, right? So I'm definitely a big fan of using some kind of software to speed up the process.
Are live networking events still a reasonable opportunity?
I go to, you know, lots of them, but they need to be really targeted and focused. I believe that a lot of times people go to needle in a haystack events, like a chamber of commerce event or like some kind of, you know, general business event. And there are hundreds of people there. It's a big cattle call. And you're looking for a needle in a haystack, like 1 out of 100 people might be a good fit for you. So, you know, it's like an hour and a half event. You're not with your family. You had to drive across town to get there. You're eating some bad food. You're having some watered down drink. You're having conversation with someone you're not really enjoying. And it's just not the most effective use of your time. And ultimately, you know, maybe you have 3 conversations and then you leave and you're like, why did I do that? Versus really finding where your target market is hanging out. What organizations do they belong to? What events do they attend? What conferences do they go to? And even if it's a conference on the other side of the country and it happens once a year, that could be much more effective strategy for building relationships for you. Going to that conference once a year and paying a lot more money because it's going to be more expensive than staying in your local community, then going to some monthly meeting month after month where you're just kind of socializing with the same group of people every time and you're not really building the right relationship. So that was a big turning point for me, was that realization, realizing that I didn't need to just, you know, keep on going to the same month after month cattle call, needle and haystack type of events. And actually going to targeted events filled with my ideal type of person that I want to build a relationship with, that's going to be a lot better use of my time.
Yeah, and I think that you're an example of somebody who's kind of taken that approach and really developed an entire career, an entire business entity, such as Smart Business Revolution, around that principle. You then went to, after doing the blogging and some of these other things, how did you get involved in the number of webinars that you do? Because you do a lot of them.
Yeah, and that brings up a great point, is that the people who you should be building relationships with evolves over time, right? You know, I mean, the people who I was building relationships with 10 years ago
are not the same.
Is not the same. And the people who I'm going to be building relationships with a year from now is going to be different. You know, so you have to be really cognizant of that. A lot of times I see people, they're spending time with, going to lunch with, going to coffee with the same people, and they're wondering why things never change. It's because they're not broadening their worldview. They're not meeting new people. They're not going to new events. They're not immersing themselves in new communities. And that's how things change. That's how things evolve. So, you know, The simple answer is I started getting involved with webinars. Actually, my podcast has been one of the most amazing tools. I'm sure you've seen this as well. One of the most amazing tools for building my network. I recommend everyone has a podcast. I don't even care if anyone listens to it. I mean, I like if people listen to it, but the top priority really is you want to use it for selfish purposes. You want to use it to be able to connect with people you wouldn't otherwise be able to connect with. And I eventually decided that webinars were really effective for me. They helped me to grow my audience in a way that blogging and podcasting hadn't. And so I wanted to do more of them. And so I just immersed myself in different communities, whether online, whether it's a Facebook group or a LinkedIn group or direct introductions, you know, getting direct introductions to other people. I got Google groups that I belong to, filled with other people who do webinars. And then just sought to be present in that community, to deliver value to other people in that community, to connect with other people in that community. And, you know, as a result, I've been able to do, you know, somewhere north of 300 webinars just over the last 3 or 4 years, is because I just doubled down on that strategy and I really focused on building those relationships. Now, by necessity, that means that something else has to give. A lot of times you can't have what you had before and have what you're moving towards. And so really that means that you're letting something go as you're moving towards something else. And that's a challenge in itself. There might be personal relationships involved, but you know, I've found that you've got to do it if you want to propel your business forward, if you want to start building relationships in a new area. And so that's what I've done.
I think that's the next frontier, frankly, for attorneys, is webinars. Like many things, I think attorneys, and I'm guilty of this just as much as anybody else.
They were the last to adopt technology. Exactly. Attorneys were the last to, you know, adopt fax machines, web, you know,
or to give them up.
Yeah, right. Oh, right, too. Yeah, right, exactly.
And so you see so many, you know, the entrepreneur set, business individuals who are adopting webinars as a methodology for building a brand and marketing. And you don't really see a lot of attorneys doing that. And I think that's going to change in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. And I think you have a lot to, you and other folks, people like Amy Porterfield and others who do a lot of webinars, who are going to be the models for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, a webinar is just a digital version of a speech.
Yeah, and or a presentation.
A one-to-many. It's just a one-to-many communication device, like a book. A book is a one-to-many communication device. A movie, a film is one to many. It's communicating to multiple people at once. It's allowing you to duplicate yourself further. So many lawyers complain that they don't have enough time, right? They're strapped for time. There's not enough time to get everything done. They're stuck at the office all the time. And then they go to some networking event and they have one conversation with one person for 20 minutes. And then they move their way on to the next person. They talk to one person at one time for 20 minutes. And then they move on, you know, and it's not effective use of your time. Versus a speech or a webinar is communicating to a larger group of people all at once. And so, yeah, I'm gung-ho on them. Webinars are not going away. They are, they're on the rise. They're continuing to be popular. And here's actually another, this statistic will blow you away. So we're recording this in late 2017. And I think there's somewhere between 2.5 and 3 billion people who are connected to the internet right now. There's about 8 or 9 billion people on the planet. And over the next 4 years, that number of people who are connected to the internet is projected to triple. Okay, triple. Now, that is phenomenal. There isn't a local community in the United States or anywhere really where the population is going to grow at that pace. And if you're not using a tool like webinars, then you're missing out on this trend. You're missing out on this huge amount of growth. Now, and we haven't even gotten to talking about AI, which I'm kind of fascinated with as well, and how that's going to affect the legal profession. And I think that, you know, it's kind of insulating you to an extent from some of the technological changes which are going to affect the practice of law by starting to build your own communication channel and build your ability to communicate directly with a group of people.
Well, I hope we see that, because I think that's, in the long run, is better for the community.
Yes.
But through all of this, now you've come to the point where all of these past experiences have now culminated in another new venture that you've started, which is really fascinating to me, that I'd like to hear a little more about, and that's Rise 25. So these are live events, these are live training exercises that you're putting together. Tell us a little bit about how you and Jeremy created Rise 25, what its purpose is.
Yeah, I like to say that the topic found us. It's not that we found the topic, it's the topic found us. Basically, Jeremy and I had known each other for a while, and we were both going to conference here in Northern California, Napa Valley. And he was coming in, and he called me up like 3 weeks beforehand and said, hey, what if we were to do a small little event, get a group together of entrepreneurs, do like kind of a little mastermind just the day before? And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. Let's do it. We did it. We really enjoyed it. And we decided to keep on doing it. And we just have kept on going from there. It's been about 3 years now. I'd been solo for a while, and it's really nice having a partner and someone who I get along with really well. And
now, Jeremy's not an attorney, right?
No, he's a chiropractor. And when you think about it, a chiropractor, you know, they're not making money unless their hands are on you. And literally, like, they can't work on two people at once, right? You know?
So how do they scale their business?
He's managed to scale his business. He looked around, and when he realized that there wasn't a chiropractic jobs website, so he created one of the leading chiropractic jobs website. He created a new nutritional supplement business. He created a podcast, and he's monetized that through interviewing people and getting sponsors for that. And of course, doing Rise 25 together. And so he's found other ways to generate revenue, or through his own chiropractic and massage facility, which is in Chicago, he's found other ways to bring in other, you know, revenue sources for the business. So he's really creative about that. But ultimately, we realized that the people we had coming to us for advice and help were other professional services entrepreneurs like ourselves, who were stuck in that trading hours for dollars and who wanted to shift from one-to-one to one-to-many and weren't exactly sure how to do it. And so we eventually started niching down and focusing on helping that market, and that's what we do now. And why retreats? Why live events? Simply, we really enjoy it. We also have some virtual training programs as well. But we also know that nothing creates progress, movement, and results quite as well as just taking a couple of days, separating yourself, ripping off the Band-Aid, taking you away from your business, and putting yourself with a group of other entrepreneurs and ourselves and focusing and working on your business. And we've seen amazing results. I mean, we had one guy who We lit a fire under him. Within 30 days, he'd done his own live event, and he did over $210,000 in revenue within 30 days of attending one of our events. So we know that the stuff that we do works, and we know that lawyers or non-lawyers alike, we share certain commonalities. We share certain limiting beliefs about what it is we do. We think that because we do it one-on-one, that we can't possibly do it in a one-to-many fashion. It's untrue. There's ways that you can shift into other ways. It's probably going to require some kind of metamorphosis or change, but there are ways that you can get. Here's the key thing, really. It's about getting compensated for the knowledge and expertise in your head. And the first and the easiest way that people think to do that is by dividing up hours of their day into chunks and selling it off to the highest bidder. That's the easiest way to do it. It's also the way that you pay the kid next door to mow your lawn. But as you know, it's very limited in that you can only serve one at a time. You can't, if you're helping one, you can't be helping another. And there's only so much that you can charge that the market's willing to pay. And so what we teach people to do is to rethink those things, really think about what result they want to help their market to achieve, and then to start to productize and create offerings which they can deliver to people in a one-to-many fashion rather than just being stuck on the one-to-one merry-go-round that so many lawyers are stuck on.
It sounds fascinating, but at the same time, it sounds terrifying to me.
It's
a little scary. If I'm going to put myself out there to think, well, I'm going to go to this retreat, I'm going to be with a bunch of entrepreneurs who either are making a product or having a service that they offer. It's not really law, and can what I do translate to what they're looking to help develop? And so, do you do these retreats on a regular basis or is it ad hoc?
We're on a pace of doing about 3 to 4 of them a year now.
Do you have any coming up?
Our next one is in a month, November 7th to 9th in Austin, Texas.
Nice place to go, Austin.
Yeah, we also get to pick fun places. So I just got back from Santa Barbara last week. Was doing a smaller version. We did a short little half day workshop there, and that's an amazing thing. And that's actually that really lights my fire. That really makes me excited too. Is because once you start moving in the direction away from trading hours of your time and moving towards what is my vision of the world? It could be IP law, or it could be something completely unrelated. Nothing says that as a lawyer, you have to get paid, that what you get paid to do has to be filling out legal documents or has to be writing legal briefs. We go to law school and we learn how the world works, and we understand in a much deeper way than most of the population, the lay population understands about how the way that the world works. And then we shut ourselves down and we think that we can only do this one thing. And it's not true. I have allowed myself to be open-minded and to pursue the opportunities. And so, one of the first opportunities was other people asking me, "Hey, John, you do a good job of building relationships. Can you show me how to do that?" And so then I started to say, "Okay, well, people are willing to pay me for this. Maybe there's something to that.
Maybe I should run with that." Yeah.
Maybe I should run with that. Exactly. And so I would like for more lawyers to think that way. Think, okay, I'm open to this idea, and I'm gonna try and create something that will deliver value to people. Because ultimately, it's about delivering value and helping people. Okay. It doesn't need to be like I'm gonna fill out some kind of legal document.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but it sounds fascinating to me, and I can't wait to talk to you a little more about, on a personal level, about getting involved with Rise 25. But if our audience wants to find out a little more about doing so, how do they do that? What's the best way for them to connect with you in that respect?
Sure. Best way to learn about Rise 25 is rise25.com, RASE25.com. And, you can download, we've got a template there. We call it our Dream Product Ladder template. And the idea is to help you to identify untapped revenue that you have in your business. Everyone has it. Every business has it, and I'm a big believer in having someone who has looked inside a lot of different businesses, like myself, look at your business and give you some outsider perspective. And a lot of times people are just they're completely missing the opportunities, especially if you've been in business for a while and you've got a client base, you've got clients that trust you. There are probably ways that you can serve that client base in a deeper way, get them better results, and also drive more revenue for your business. And so this is a tool that helps you to identify that, identify $50,000 to $100,000 at least in untapped revenue sitting in your business right now. So you people can go download that.
Well, terrific. I will make sure that we include that in the notes and help direct folks to rise25.com. And John, I can't thank you enough for taking your time. I know you're extraordinarily busy. And plus, on top of that, you got all these issues with the fires going on out there in California. So, I mean, just the fact that you took the time to be with me today, I'm deeply indebted to you. And I do appreciate it. And I want to wish you all the best. And I look forward to the next opportunity to shaking your hand personally and getting to know you on a more personal basis.
Awesome, Neil. Yeah, my pleasure. And if anyone listening to this wants to connect, go to Rise25 and, you can hop on my email list there and just hit reply. I read all the emails. I reply to most of them, maybe not all of them. I do my best to reply to as many of them as I can, but I love hearing from people, so feel free to reach out.
Okay. Well, thanks ever so much, John.
Cool. Thanks, Neil.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.